Jayam Vishnu Pad, Paramhamsa Prabhajakacharya Asto, Charasati Swishri Maharaj Divine Grace, Abhay Charan Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jayam Vishnu Pad, Paramhamsa Prabhajakacharya Asto, Charasati Swishri Maharaj Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj Prabhupada Ki. Ananta Bodhi Vaishnavindu Ki. Namacharya Sri Haridas Thakur ki, Rantra Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Hitai Gaura Premanande. All glories the assembled bodies. All glories the assembled bodies. All glories the assembled bodies. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So this afternoon text is from Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 2, which is entitled The Contents of the Gita Summarized. Text 28. Chapter 2, text 28. Well, those of some people like to bow to the cell phone. We'll give it about a minute or so. 2:28. Okay. Please repeat. Abhyaktadini Bhutani Vyakta Madhyani Bharata Abhyakta Nirhannani Eva Tatra Ka Paridevana. Avyaktadini Bhutani.
Avyaktadini Bhutani.
Avyaktadini Bhutani.
Avyaktadini Bhutani.
Vyakta Madhyani Bharata.
Vyakta Madhyani Bharata.
Vyakta Madhyani Bharata.
Vyakta Madhyani Bharata.
Avyakta nidanani va.
Avyakta nidanani va.
Avyakta nidanani va.
Avyakta nidanani va.
Tatra ka paridevana.
Tatra ka paridevana.
Tatra ka paridevana.
Tatra ka paridevana.
So please repeat. Avyakta
Adini.
Adini. In the beginning unmanifested.
In the beginning unmanifested.
Bhutani.
Bhutani.
All that are created.
All that are created.
Vyakta.
Vyakta.
Manifested.
Manifested.
Madhyani.
Madhyani.
In the middle.
In the middle.
Bharata.
Bharata.
O descendant of Bharat.
O descendant of Bharat.
Avyakta,
non-manifested.
Nidanani,
when vanquished.
Eva, it is all like that. Tatra,
therefore.
Ka,
what?
Paridevana,
lamentation.
Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. All created beings are unmanifest in their beginning, manifest in their interim state, and unmanifest again when annihilated. So what need is there for lamentation? Please repeat. All created beings,
are unmanifest,
in their beginning,
manifest in their interim state,
and unmanifest again
when annihilated.
So what need is there
for lamentation?
What point advice divine grace to the power of God? Accepting that there are two classes of philosophers, one believing in the existence of the soul and the other not believing in the existence of the soul, there is no cause for lamentation in either case. Non-believers in the existence of the soul are called atheists by followers of Vedic wisdom. Yet even if for argument's sake we accept this atheistic theory, there is still no cause for lamentation. Apart from the separate existence of the soul, the material elements remain unmanifested before creation. From this subtle state of non-manifestation comes manifestation. Just as from ether air is generated, from air fire is generated, from fire water is generated, and from water earth becomes manifested. From the earth, many varieties of manifestations take place. Take for example a big skyscraper manifested from the earth. When it is dismantled, the manifestation becomes again unmanifested and remains as atoms in the ultimate stage. The law of conservation of energy remains, but in course of time, things are manifested and unmanifested. That is the difference. Then what is the cause? What cause is there for lamentation in either the stage of manifestation or in the stage of unmanifestation? Somehow or other, even in the unmanifested stage, things are not lost. Both at the beginning and at the end, all elements remain unmanifested, and only in the middle are they manifested. And this does not make any real material difference. And if we accept the Vedic conclusion as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, that these material bodies are perishable in due course of time, antavanta ime deha, but that the soul is eternal, nitya shukta saririna, then we must remember always that the body is like a dress. Therefore, why lament the changing of a dress? The material body has no factual existence in relation to the eternal soul. It is something like a dream. In a dream, we may think of flying in the sky or sitting in a chariot as a king, but when we wake up, we can see that we are neither in the sky nor seated on the chariot. The Vedic wisdom encourages self-realization on the basis of non-existence of the material body. Therefore, in either case, whether one believes in the existence of the soul or one does not believe in the existence of a soul, there is no cause for lamentation for the loss of the body. Om Agena Timiranyasya Gyana Gyana Shalakaya Chakshu Umilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadanti Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamsya Sri Rupa Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishaka Vitam Sya E Krishna Kruna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostite Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanusute Devi Panamani Hari Priya Vancha Kalpat Rubesya Kripa Sundibya Evacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shivashadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacharya Sitarine. Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratishe Namaha. Ananda Lilamaya Vigrahaya Himavyadi Vaishavi Sundaraya Tasmi Mahaprema Raspadaya Chaitanya Chandaya Namo Namaste Chaitanya Chandaya Namo Namaste Chaitanya Chandaya Namo Namaste Chaitanya Chandaya Namo Namaste Hare Krishna. So here's the text again, you don't have to repeat. Avyakta Dini Bhutani Vyakta Madhyani Bharata Avyakta Nidana Nieva Tatraka Paridevana. All created beings are unmanifest in their beginning, manifest in their interim state, and unmanifest again when annihilated. So what need is there for lamentation? So this is Krishna explaining to Arjuna the importance of the soul as compared to the body. The soul is ever living. So this is a good and very interesting lesson for us, for all of us to learn. Krishna is explaining this. And before we go any further, I'm begging my spiritual master for guidance, Srila Prabhupada for guidance, and begging your permission so that whatever comes from my mouth is what they would want you to hear. Hare Krishna. So all created beings are unmanifest in their beginning, manifest in their interim state, and unmanifest when annihilated. So as far as the body goes, this is the description. Arjuna is to fight a battle, and he is not going to be able to kill any souls. He is going to end some people's bodies. And he is in lamentation because of that. So then Krishna explains, but at some point they were living, then they came to life, and they will die. You kill them, you don't kill them, they still will die. Okay, so right now we are in the interim state. We are manifest. Our bodies are active now. Okay? So all created beings, in the beginning, they are unmanifest. They may be in the body of Lord Vishnu, depending on the time when the Mahatattva is now made available. There is Lord Brahma. They all, along with the Vishnus, even before Lord Brahma, and then after Lord Brahma, Sri Rudakshaya Vishnu, so many changes go on for living entities to begin to use the body in activities based on a karma. And that's the interim. Lifetime is what's called the interim now, when people are actually acting out whatever it is that they're acting. And then, one by one, or sometimes in groups, again, the bodies are unmanifest. So this is what's going on at the body level. Sometimes it's not acting. At a certain time when the soul is inside that body, the body is acting, then the soul leaves and the body doesn't act. But the body is just what it is. As in the purpose, the Prabhupada says, he even, and it's been a while since I've seen the Prabhupada, combine the reasoning for those who don't believe in the existence of the soul and those who do believe in the existence of the soul. And he's still saying, as far as the body goes, there really isn't any difference. Now, so he says, there are two classes of philosophers, one believing in spirituality, the existence of the soul, and the other one, totally materialistic, not believing the existence of the soul. Either way, if we're talking about the body, then there is no cause for lamentation. Because, and he starts with those who don't believe in the existence of the soul. Atheistic people, atheists, those who accept atheistic theories. He says, the body, the material elements remain unmanifested before creation. Then non-manifestation becomes, there's creation, so then things are manifest
And then he goes into describing how ether generates air, and air generates fire, fire generates water, and from water the earth becomes manifested, and the scientists are way behind on that one because they won't even believe it, if you ask me. But this is what is, so many things are in the Shastra that scientists have not caught up with yet. Anyway, so he gives an example. A big skyscraper manifested on the earth. When it's dismantled, the manifestation becomes again unmanifest and remains as atoms in the ultimate state. So let's look at even a simpler example. Say a child goes to a beach and builds a sand castle with his hand. So now, before they build the sand castle, it was just sand on the beach. Then now he's built something. So now you see a structure there. So there's dimensions to it, whether the child was thinking about it, he just made it a certain size. And maybe they go home, and the high tide comes in, the water comes in, runs over the castle, and the entire thing gets flattened again. Next morning it comes, there's no castle. It's just plain land again. So before, when the sand was in the beach, that's unmanifested. And then this child manifests a sandcastle. And then after a period of time, time takes its course, the sandcastle is dismantled into the particles of sand again. There were particles of sand, and at the end, again, it becomes non-manifest like particles of sand. So if that's what's going on, then why are we so concerned that the sandcastle broke down? So what? That's the point he's making here. It's not such a big deal. It's not such a big deal. And so, both at the beginning and the end, all elements remain unmanifested. The beginning, when there's a sand on the beach, and at the end, when the sand is back on the beach because the sandcastle is destroyed, they just remain like little particles. So it doesn't make any real difference. And that's the point Srila Prabhupada is making. So the underlying reasoning for him saying this, what Krishna explaining this, is don't get so hung up on the body. Because this is the situation of the body. It's unmanifest at some point. Then there's creation. For us, there's pregnancy. And the whole process goes. And then there's birth. And then there's life. And then after that, there's death. And if we don't consider the soul, we're considering the physical body, then what happens? The physical body is either cremated. Does that mean the elements have disappeared? No, they haven't. When a body gets cremated, it turns to ashes. But ashes are part of the material energy too. When the body is buried, it changes into soil. That's also part of the material energy. It becomes unmanifest. It goes in the soil. Even if somebody dies by drowning in the ocean, and the body goes to the bottom of the ocean, some of the living entities in the ocean will feed on the body. They will feed on the body. And so it becomes a part of their body. And even when they secrete waste and all of that, that's also part of the human, of that particular body that died. So where the body winds up, that may change. Say if somebody was living on the earth and then they died in the sea, that particular body now is in a different place, but it's actually no longer active. No longer active. Still, it is part of the material energy. So, science knows about the conservation of energy or conservation of mass, as we like to talk about that way. So, what's important for us is when our bodies are manifested, the situation we're in now, and the advantage that we should take. The real purpose of life, when we are manifest, when we are in this stage, makes a big difference of what happens to the soul when the body is no longer active, when we die. So, transformation happens for even animate, active, and inanimate objects. Everything. There is transformation going on. We are aging, but so are the buildings and all of them. They're also aging. The cars are aging. Everything ages. Whether it's animate, whether it's functional as a personality or something that's alive, as we say, or even those things that we say are not alive, they also go through some sort of breakdown. So, in one sense, for the material body, there is no death. There's just a transition from one state to another. That's really what happens. Now, because in that particular break from the manifest to the unmanifest, going from life to death, the soul leaves, and especially we as human beings, we begin to miss the person that's died. But what do we really miss? We miss the body? The person is not the body. So what do we really miss? Well, first of all, let's talk about death itself, briefly, because I don't know, you don't like to hear this about so much. The concerns about it are two. One, people don't like the idea of death because there is, and I'm talking about spiritualists, there's uncertainty as to where the soul will go next. You don't know. If we take this process of bhakti seriously, and hear and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then there's every reason to hope that we will get enough mercy to be taken to the spiritual world, or even if that doesn't happen, our next life will be one where we'll be closer to going back home. So we have at least direction. But many people who aren't living spiritual life, they aren't quite sure what's going to happen. And of course, the second point of concern about death is the sorrow that we feel because of the departure of the person that's gone. We don't have the association. For a while, we're not going to have the association. Materialists think that the association is ended, but devotees know that the association is only temporarily halted, because we'll meet that person again. We wind up in the spiritual world. For the spiritual world, it's just moments of us leaving and going back. But for us, it's many, many, many lifetimes in the material world. So we do meet again by spiritual standards in a very short time. So lamentation, we go through this. We are eternal, but we are looking for joy and we are looking for satisfaction from a temporary place, with this manifested but temporary body. We are looking for joy. We're looking to be satisfied. We're trying to work hard for some sort of material satisfaction in this material world, which is a combination of happiness and distress. You can't leave one. Happiness and distress are like two sides of a coin. As soon as you pick up the coin, you pick the heads and you pick the tails too. You can't leave one part of it. So both of them occur. So because we're looking for joy and satisfaction in the material world with this temporary bodies that's very limited, that has limited senses, and we're only here for a limited time, and things, the body itself ages and ages, and as time goes on gives us more problems, that is the source of our lamentation. So then how do we remedy the situation? We should use the body for the real purpose that Krishna has designed it for, which is bhakti yoga, devotional service. Connecting the body to bhakti, doing devotional service, brings joy eventually. We said eventually, it doesn't bring joy almost instantly, because there is so much that we need to clean up from our consciousness. So that process of purification we have to go through. And that, once we are in that state, we have a good sense, or even just a taste, of bhava. We're not talking about prema, just bhava. Before we're in the prema stage, just the feeling of the connection of love of Godhead, the soul becomes so happy that now life becomes much, much, much more meaningful to us. And then we stop lamenting about the things that the physical body goes through. And so, connecting the body to bhakti brings joy eventually, and that joy is permanent. It is permanent, here in this life and in the next life. So that's where we need to have our consciousness at. We are spirit souls, jivatmas. And then there is the Lord as the Paramatma, the super soul. and they are both in the body of every individual. But who owns the body? Sometimes we say my body, but do we really own our bodies? No. The body belongs to the Lord. So the Lord in his mercy lives in us, close to our souls in the heart area, as the Paramatma. But the Paramatma is an expansion of Krishna. Therefore, the Paramatma is really the owner of the body. Even though it does more of observing what we're doing, that's the real owner. So we don't own the body. As in Bhagavad Gita 5:29, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, the Lord owns everything. And so, with that in mind, we are in a situation where our soul is living in a body, and therefore, since the Paramatma owns the body, then we should use the body for the purpose of what the Paramatma likes us to do. And it comes back to the same thing, performing bhakti. The Jiva Atma is the servant of the Paramatma. The Jiva Atma, we, the soul, is the servant of the Super Soul. That's the consciousness that we have to have. The Super Soul owns the body. So if we give an example, say you're a business owner, you own a factory, and you have some machines in the factory, and then you have people who are your employees, right? So your employees serve you, because you're the business owner. Now if an employee comes in, and you know what it is that your business is about, and so the employee is supposed to do the work according to how you've planned it for that employee, but the employee comes in and takes the machines and does things that he wants to do for himself or herself, now how would you feel? What would you do? Probably fire a person, right? Get rid of them. Get rid of them. Okay. Well, Krishna owns a physical body. So how come we in this physical body, we do what we want to do for ourselves and not the owner? So what does Krishna do with us? So, fire us, well maybe not, but there is obviously reprisal, chastisement for not using the body for what the body, the owner of the body wants. But the owner happens to be very merciful too. Krishna is merciful. So, to get our attention, to even have us do what we should be doing for our own benefit, Krishna takes the trouble of going outside the body just to tell us what to do. Paramatma is inside the body, next to the soul, yet where do we get our instructions? Guru. Guru is outside our body. Shastra. Shastra is outside our body. So now Krishna goes outside the body to tell us, because that's where our minds are at. So he has to meet us there and tell us, do this, do this, do this, do this, just so we can bring our minds back to use the body properly so that we get saved from this place, which is a manifestation, a non-manifestation. Future world is always permanent. There is no manifestation, not manifested. Our home is just there. It's just there. And it has everything that we can, in fact, live a wonderful life in service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the Lord has to go outside and give instructions. So when Arjuna finally surrendered to Krishna in the Battle of Kurukshetra, and he decided he was going to do Krishna's will, then he stopped lamenting. Because he was a Kshatriya, yes, there were people opposing him, yes. Some of those people were people he lived with, some of the people that he raised, raised him, and some of the people that he confided in, they were on the other side. But when Arjuna surrendered to Krishna's wishes, then he was free of lamentation. So then he fought with focus on what he had to do, and free of what's happening and what's happening here and what's happening here, what is going to happen, all of those questions we're asking, which is in the first chapter. It didn't matter anymore. So we are to serve Krishna and his devotees. That has to be first and foremost in our mind. But if we want to exploit the material energy, then we got trouble. So bhakti is to remove the tendencies to exploit. To remove the tendencies to exploit. But we've been doing that a long time. So it takes a while to break away from all of these. And then there's Maya that tests us whether we really have broken away or whether we're still attached to some things. So the whole process of breaking away, because we've been living this other way of just going with the material energy and the things for our own selves, it becomes a difficult thing. And that's why Srila Prabhupada says, well, that's tapasya. It's tapasya not because it really is tapasya, but because we ourselves don't want to break from material energy so easily. We make it difficult on ourselves. We make it difficult on ourselves. The purification means real enjoyment in the end when we break away from lamenting about material things and trying to acquire, and if we don't get it, get angry and then get envious of somebody who has something that we would like, all of that. When that gets broken away, then the happiness from the soul becomes really, 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 really felt. And that's real enjoyment. And that even continues in the spiritual world. So, yes, we are in the manifest stage now. Before we become unmanifest, the body becomes unmanifest, we should really, really, really try to serve Krishna, Guru, devotees, and take the process of bhakti very, very seriously, especially the chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, many of us are parents. And if not, we will be, I'm sure. There's an important message for parents, or those with children, or guardians, you know, if you're taking care of somebody else's child. Many of us were raised, when we were children, with stories that, at the end, had something good for us to learn. More than goodness, morality. Mm-hmm. Those who call it fairy tales. Many of us were raised with fairy tales. I was raised with fairy tales. Now, fairy tales by themselves are not a bad thing at all. And of course, devotees should not be necessarily against them. But there was one lecture by Radhanath Maharaj who actually took up this whole thing about fairy tales. Somebody asked a question about it. And he brought it up. And I said, well, fairy tales, they are stories, true enough. The pastimes of Krishna and Krishna devotees are also stories. But they are true stories. They are in the Shastra. So then he started comparing these two. And that got my attention. Fairy tales versus Krishna's Leela. Or the pastimes of Krishna or pastimes of Krishna's devotees. Now, fairy tales give good moral lessons. True enough. But the short end of it, or the part of it that's not so great, I don't want to say cons of it, but for us, the fairy tales do not purify our hearts. They don't. Krishna's pastimes do. Whereas the fairy tales do not. Fairy tales don't go beyond the material into the spiritual. They don't. They only deal with material, which is birth, death, old age, and disease, and no more. And the other thing about it, which is actually quite dangerous, if you think about it, for devotee parents, are fairy tales, sometimes it is told in such a way, and this is, remember, children are the ones that are hearing this now, okay? And at that age, for children, they believe. They're going to believe the fairy tales because, especially something good in the end, mommy and daddy are going to teach me from this. But a good many of the fairy tales have some parts of it that are not true. They're actually made up. Okay, so a story like Jack and the Beanstalk, and I was one of those who raised Jack and the Beanstalk, and that stalk just grew and went up and up and up and up, up the sky. And then you learn later on that actually that's not true. Or the other part, now kids have caught up to it now. It's like Santa Claus, right? As fat as he is, he comes through the kitchen chimney, Right? Even your house has a chimney, maybe your house doesn't have a chimney, and still it comes through the chimney and puts the toys at Christmas time that you, the parent, bought for them. Give the credit to a person who can't come through the chimney anyway. This is all made up of story. And the kids believe it. Now, later on, when we grow up, the children grow up, and they realize that those things aren't true, the danger is they're going to begin to conclude in their minds that if something happens, they say in a story, that it's not what they can really imagine to be true, or it's not true in real life, then they should discard it. Now, you might think that that's safe, but it's not safe at all. Because when it comes to the pastimes of Krishna, it also has so many superhuman things. Agasura, it's a snake, 8 miles long, opens his mouth, the top part of his mouth sticks the sky. Now, somebody who was born with fairy tales, it doesn't happen with any snake anywhere, therefore I won't believe it. But it actually is true. So the problem is, the fairy tales cause children later on when they grow up to discard all of those things that were made up and put in to sweeten the story. And then this child is a devotee. And then the pastimes of so many, from the heavenly planets, they all do superhuman things we can't do. And so they're all in the Shastra also. But they are all true. So if we raise our child with fairy tales, then there's a danger of them discarding those things that are Krishna's pastimes that are actually true because they can't imagine it. And to add to the fact that the fairy tales don't purify the hearts of the children, is it a good idea to teach fairy tales? It's actually better to start teaching the children Krishna's pastimes. Because Krishna's pastimes has superhuman things, but when they grow up, it's true. And when they grow up, the Shastra will in fact reinforce the fact that it is true. They don't have to disbelieve anymore, any part of it. And that was Radha Maharaj's argument. I kind of stretched it. But, you know, that was the argument. So it's better to teach children Krishna's pastimes. Now, not only that, here are some of the benefits from it. Now, the first one we said, they'll believe the stories as children, and when they grow up, they'll believe it because the Shastra will reinforce it that the stories are true. Now, also, when the children grow up, it would increase their faith in Krishna. Definitely increase your faith in Krishna because they want to hear more about this superhuman type of stories about Krishna and Krishna's devotees. We also mentioned the third point, the scriptural pastimes, they go beyond the material to the spiritual, transcendental. Fairy tales can't do that. And number four, it will make both children and adults marvel at the powers that are beyond what we're used to. It's all there. For children, point number five, it's easy for Krishna to become a hero if you can do superhuman things. Krishna is just how children think. Krishna becomes the hero. Just like a cowboy, they see Krishna as a hero. And what better personality for the children to have as a hero than Krishna himself? And that comes from the pastime. And follow up with Krishna as a hero, then Krishna prema will in fact come faster because they already love Krishna for what he can do. So these are all points in favor of telling Krishna's pastimes rather than fairy tales. So fairy tales have good moral lessons, but they don't come anywhere near the benefit that devoted children will get when they hear Krishna's pastimes. So what we have to do at this point is learn as many pastimes as possible from the Shastra and teach the children in as simplified way as possible. And those of us that can write books or can tell stories and record them, we should definitely do that. There are so many, many, many pastimes of Krishna. And the sadhus, the pure devotees of Krishna and their lives, that alone, so many things there that we can benefit from it. So we are in the manifest state now. We are living in these bodies. And so one of the things we need to do is definitely take, as adults, take bhakti yoga very seriously and guide the children. One of the examples being talking about children's pastimes rather than fairy tales. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you for tolerating me. Are there any questions or comments at this time?
this is one pastime, Guruji, and let me share. When Satyabhama's father died, Satrajit, Krishna was crying. So, I mean, the same person who is telling this verse from Gita, but in later pastime, he is actually, you know, crying because his father-in-law passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to share. So, it is not that, I think maybe he's trying to impress his wife, that I love, you know, so much, you know, for you and for your family.
Mm. Well, we are also, I hope they most be heard the pastime, Satyabhama's father passing, and Krishna and married Satyabhama, Guru Dwarka. So that was his father-in-law that passed, and Krishna was very emotional, crying. In fact, we're told when our Guru Maharaj leaves, we should also definitely shed tears. When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj left, Srila Prabhupada shed a lot of tears. Now, it doesn't mean that Srila Prabhupada doesn't know that we're not the body. That's true. He knows we're not. In fact, he's teaching us we're not the body. But the important thing is, there is a connection that the disciple has with his guru. Hmm? The guru may have left the body. Srila Prabhupada, sometimes we don't even remember he's left the body because it's like here, right? The emergency is right here. But Srila Prabhupada has actually left. Left a long time ago. But the connection is always there because his instruction is there. So we can always benefit from that. Now, as far as being emotional, that has to do with the connection, the emotional connection we have with our guru, and that the real fact is the physical body is gone and we won't be able to associate with him like we used to. That part can make us emotional. That part can be emotional, and therefore, then it's understandable that a person gets emotional and cries like that. And Krishna was trying to do the same thing. Yeah. All right. Any other comments or questions?
You know, at even fairy tales, any fiction books in the material world. I mean, where can you find? A flying car in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Where can you find? Where can you find stuff that aren't real?
That's the point we're making.
And because it's not there. The real book has it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Don't believe in any atheist that would make some stuff up or criticize us. I've even heard from a guy.
Good. That's the summary of what I've been talking about. He just told you. Okay. So the things from those, even fiction sometimes, not just fairy tales, fiction sometimes they stretch it. Talk about, anyway. Even some of the songs, right? So, fly me to the moon and let me play with the star. The cow jumped over the moon. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
You're talking about children, especially the younger children, but teenagers, they don't have the habit of reading books that much. How do we engage them thinking about Krishna and the love of Krishna?
So the point he's making is some of the teenagers don't have a habit of reading as much. Okay. How do we engage them? If you start, now we'll talk about those, but I'll just start. If we start with little children, making them read, they will get used to it. It's a developing habit. But if you missed that part already, children have grown and they didn't read when they were younger, what do you do? Well, my question is, what do they do now to hear, to relate? What do they do? Cell phone,
exactly.
iPad, yeah. So then send the Shastra there. Send the Shastra to the medium they're used to using now. The only way they're going to hear. Send it there. So, Srila Prabhupada said, one of the examples of the 24 gurus, of the Avadhut Brahman, is the snake. And the explanation of the snake, this is in Srimad Bhagavatam. The snake lives in a hole, but the snake never makes a hole. He doesn't make a hole. The mouse can make a hole, other small insects that can, you know, claw out, they can make the hole, but they're all afraid of the snake. So the snake comes in, the mouse runs out, and the snake's got a home. Right? That's how it lives. So, these iPads and this, they already been made for us. Just take them and use them. That's all. Use them for Krishna consciousness, like we're using this for Krishna consciousness. I didn't make this. So, this is, right now, if they didn't read and you would like to get, we do have quite a bit in book, you know, book form, and they're going to miss that. But as technology, you know, is advancing on, is how they call it, these other ways of getting information is coming electronically. So we just have to send Krishna consciousness that way, and that's how you're going to get them. Hare Krishna. Any other comments or questions? Okay, all right, so we'll stop here then. Rantrashmat Bhavagita ki
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai.
Nitai Gaura Premanande.
Jai.
Thank you. Thank you.